Hi, this is Dynasty Ireland, and you're listening to the Dynasty Hot Seat.
Yes, hello everybody, and welcome back once again to the Dynasty Hot Seat, the only Dynasty show out there that is a certified inferno. And we've got a very welcome return guest on here. I think maybe third, fourth, maybe even time. Rich, you've been on the show. It's great to have you back on, mate. Of course, it's Rich at Dynasty Island. He is, by the way, congratulations, Rich, one of the senior contributors now over at DLF. Excellent job over there. He is also one of the people that helped run the amazing UKFF C event over in London, and of course one half of one of the best podcasts out there, the Fantasy Sanctuary, along with Big Tom Strachan as well. You got Rich at Dynasty Island back on the show. Rich, it's great to see you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Always a pleasure to come on, and yeah, now I've got to try and live up to that sort of intro. So yeah, it's hard work. That was very nice, and I appreciate the kind words.
No, absolutely no problem at all, mate. Thank you so much for coming back on. We're gonna chat some 2024 rookies, which I know you've been super busy creating your rookie guide. So you've got a lot of things to say about a lot of these rookies. But before we really dive into it, guys, if you're here and you haven't already subscribed, what's going on? You know, Rich and Tom, they've been lucky enough. They've just hit that 1,000 subscriber mark not that long ago. Rich, I want to get there by the end of 2024. You think we can get it done?
I reckon we can get you there. Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. So if you've not already, help out the cause. Hit subscribe. It's free. Hey, it doesn't charge you anything for it. So let's go with that. And Rich, before we dive into the main mock draft itself, have you really noticed, you've obviously been doing loads of tape study of these guys, what is kind of the general feeling you're getting for this 2024 class? What are like the high points, the low points that you have?
Yeah, I think it's a really fascinating class, quite frankly, because I think each individual position group has almost got its kind of micro and macro economics of it, if that makes sense. I think that the quarterback group for me, I think there's two surefire, as much as we can call quarterback surefire, kind of top prospects. And then I think there's, I don't think many people are ready to admit it, but I think there's genuinely five question marks. Now, I think the ceilings and floor of those question marks can be debated massively. But I think depending on how the next 2 months play out, I wouldn't be shocked to see any of those five fall out of the first round or potentially sneak into the first round, which is rare that there's seven quarterbacks we're sitting here potentially talking that could be in first round consideration at February. I think the running back position is absolutely fascinating because there's basically no true three-down workhorse backs, which is what we're all looking for in fantasy. And it feels like every back has some sort of flaw or knock against them. And I know everybody's just saying it's a terrible class and avoid all the running backs, but I think actually there's going to be some really interesting prospects and some really interesting value. It's just none of them are going to be that surefire thing that we've been used to over the last few years. You think of the last, you know, four or five classes, we've had Bijan, Breece Hall, Jonathan Taylor, like they're almost coming out as surefire prospects. We don't have any of that, but I still think there's going to be some really interesting value and some really interesting players depending on, you know, the all important draft capital and landing spot side of things. And then wide receiver is just insanely deep. I don't remember seeing a group of wide receivers, and everyone's talking about the top three, and they're all fantastic. But I think this wide receiver core is probably like 17, 18 players deep that are probably going to go day one and day two, which I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I think we could see some records broken in terms of number of receivers drafted in day one and two. I think it is super, super deep. And then tight end is just a weird one because Brock Bowers is a star. I think Jatavion Saunders has got all the tools to be a star, but is incredibly raw. And then it's almost a bit like the running back position where there's a few guys that are quite interesting and have got some stuff that you like, but they've all got almost like a Shakespearean fatal flaw that kind of knocks them and stops them being that fantastic prospect. So yeah, really fascinated to see basically how it plays out over the next 2.5 months, because it's pretty wide open at a lot of positions right now.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm sort of already compiling, just like I did last year, sort of compiling data on who's been drafting who at this point. And I'm going to kind of get a little ADP rundown for that. Then I'm going to do the same exact thing for sort of the period of time between the combine and the draft. And then I'm going to do another one for post-draft beginning to the start of the season, because I just love how much the draft position changes in those couple of months. So for example, last year when I did it, this time last year, everybody at 112 taking Sean Tucker. Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I remember maybe going back a few too many years, but there's Hakeem Butler was like a top three. I mean, we pretty much one QB then. There was no such thing as Superflex, but he was like a top three pick at this time. And then ended up going, I think he was the first pick of the fourth round to the Arizona Cardinals. Obviously went on to do nothing in his career, but he plummeted and was like a third round pick in Dynasty. And he was supposed to be the sure thing, the superstar. So I think everybody is so quick to be like, right, I've got the 105, I'm going to take this player. But so much changes between now and May. Just keep scooping up as much information as possible, because so much will guaranteed to change.
Yeah, exactly. But you're not ready to give up on Keyshawn Boutte yet, Rich, though, right? You still believe.
Oh no, I've very very much given up on him. I gave up on him basically as soon as he fell to the sixth round. But yeah, unfortunately at that point I'd already sort of earned the Boutte stan banner, shall we say, and struggled to shift it once that had already happened.
Yeah, let's hope there's no one plummets quite as bad as Keyshawn has in this class. That's been a severe fall from grace. But let's get right into it then. Let's pull up our mock draft tool. Rich, you've got all the picks, which is an absolutely wonderful scenario for a class like this. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, the whole lot. We're in Superflex. We're not doing a tight end premium here. So it's, I think it's more interesting that way to kind of see where your Brock Bowers and Sanders ends up without that premium. So let's get right into it, Rich. Pick 1-1. Who are you taking here? And the big question is this a certain like slam dunk lock at 1-1, or do you have a tier here that you could take a few people?
No, so I mean, my 1-1 has changed three times over the past month and a half. So I started out in I watched three games of Drake May and three games of Caleb Williams, and I had Drake May over Caleb Williams. But the more I've watched, the more I have got a couple more concerns about Drake May. And I just think that the tantalizing ceiling of what an incredible playmaker Caleb Williams could be, I think you kind of need to swing for that upside. And that's why I've, at the moment, got Caleb Williams as my 101.
Yeah, Caleb, I think, just definitely has that upside ahead of Drake May. But I think Drake May has almost suffered sort of because of like everyone just saying Caleb's definitely the one. I think the way people are speaking about Drake May is if he's like this kind of throwaway prospect. But I think if you looked at him compared to the quarterbacks that come out last year, he would as a prospect be ahead of, I would say, all of them at this stage, right?
Yeah, so film grade wise for me, he's equal to CJ Stroud. He'd have been behind Bryce Young. Which perhaps is why I still believe in Bryce Young when I've got that high film grade on him. I think Drake May's a phenomenal prospect, and I don't understand all these people that seem to be slagging him off right now. And, you know, he seems to be falling, which is weird, because I think, okay, he had a tough game against NC State where he was probably pushing a little bit and tried to do too much, and it caused some accuracy issues. Didn't have a greatest game against Clemson, but actually I think people have probably gone a bit over the top with that. I think he'd actually played all right. But this is a guy that, you know, if you were building a quarterback in a lab, they'd look like Drake May. They'd have the arm strength of Drake May. They'd probably have a little bit better accuracy in between the numbers and some better footwork. But that's stuff that you can round out. So, yeah, I'm really excited about the prospect that Drake May is. And I think that to say that it's a slam dunk 101 right now, I think is incorrect. For me, it is definitely a tier of three guys, and it is a clear cut tier that I would be happy to move back from the 101 to the 103 and pick up an asset right now. That's not a move. That's not a move I'm making. But if it stays as it is in April, May time, I would definitely do that.
And do you have in that tier, like, would you put it Williams, May, and then I presume Marvin Harrison is the third, or do you have it Harrison and May, or is it?
No, so I have got Harrison over May. To be honest, I've gone back and forth over Harrison versus Caleb as the 101. I want to draft Harrison, but just the positional value of Caleb Williams, I think, is it's almost like, I think there's, if you would say to me, who has a higher chance of being a reliable kind of elite fantasy asset, I would say Marvin Harrison. But I think that Caleb Williams' ceiling is higher than Marvin Harrison just because he plays the quarterback position. So I think that Marvin Harrison will never be more than a late first round startup pick, because, you know, you see that now, like Justin Jefferson is about as elite as you can get at the wide receiver position in terms of what he's done, but you're still not taking him in probably the top six picks of a super flex startup. No. Whereas Caleb Williams, his ceiling is absolutely, you know, a top six quarterback. So his ceiling is just naturally higher than Marvin Harrison because of the quarterback position. And that's not to slate Marvin Harrison. I think he's a phenomenal prospect, and, you know, I've said it a couple of times, he's got the highest film grade for me of any wide receiver since I've been doing this in the last 9 years. So I think he's about as safe a prospect as I can remember. He's phenomenal and does everything and more that you could ever want from a wide receiver, and we know that he's going to get that elite draft capital and hopefully pair with a future franchise quarterback wherever he does land. But I think that, he's the only player I'd ever consider in this tier with these two quarterbacks, because the quarterback value pushes them over the top as such.
You know, it's a real funny one, and I haven't seen this in action yet because I've been trying to be good, Rich, and I haven't done any startups yet. But I wouldn't be surprised if Marvin Harrison's startup ADP is actually higher than Caleb Williams' startup ADP. But the values kind of flip in that rookie draft where you're looking for more of that slam dunk, right? You don't see it very often, but I'm wondering if this is a case where people aren't wanting to take that risk of their first quarterback to be a rookie and would rather take that safer option in Marvin Harrison Jr. You don't see it too often, but do you think this is a case where it might be happening?
Probably not, just because I think that for Marvin Harrison to be going above Caleb Williams in a startup, he'd have to be going ahead of Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and CeeDee Lamb. I think that Caleb Williams, where he is, even if he's going as like QB 12, that's probably about where wide receiver 4 is going. And I think that that's probably a little bit low for where Caleb Williams is going. So I think in a startup, if anything, it would be the opposite. I think Caleb Williams is more likely to go further ahead of Marvin Harrison than he perhaps is true in terms of the rookie picks and kind of dynasty value, just because in that startup, the it's weird in that quarterbacks are never cheaper in a startup than they are in the startup, but quarterbacks are so expensive in the first two rounds, and then they become complete values after that. It's like there's that thirst to go and get either one or two quarterbacks at the start of a startup, and then their value just plummets off a cliff. So I think that Caleb Williams is in that thirst for going and getting a quarterback at the start of that startup pick.
Yeah, you're probably right with that. I'll keep an eye on it. I think I've not done any startups, but I'm sure I will, because I'm an absolute degenerate.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I'm sitting here talking with absolute certainty, but the truth is that I don't know, because I've done one startup and we've had kickers as rookie picks rather than players in the startup pool. I don't like even mock drafts. I do multiple mock drafts with DLF every month, but we've not included rookies in those yet. So I don't like including actual rookie players in any sort of startup or any sort of rookie draft until post-draft, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I'm only in one league that does that, but that is literally the theme of the league. The league's called Rookie Mistakes, so it's the whole league is built around doing that. So I'm like, okay, I can live with that. And that one league is quite fun. So we got your top tier locked in. Then, who's going at pick number four? And is this the start of a new sort of bigger tier, or what's going on in your head with these picks?
Yeah, so this is a new tier for me, and it's a tier all on its own. So it's Malik Nabers at the 104.
Yep.
I love the prospect. I think if this had been any other year, Malik Nabers would be talked up as a future superstar. I think he is phenomenal. He does everything that you'd want at the wide receiver position and probably more. He is such a smooth route runner. And sadly, if you listen to me talk about any wide receivers, that's probably the number one thing that I'm looking for is how they get open and can they get open. But he's just fun to watch. Really smooth athlete. Incredible hands, fantastic body control. There's a slight knock on, perhaps not ideal size. You know, he's 6 foot, but he is 200 pounds. Not a complete burner. You know, this isn't a guy that's going to be clocking that sort of 23, 24 mile an hour time in the league. But I still think his you know, super weapon, if you like, is his agility and his ability to move at high speed whilst changing direction. And I think that he's going to shock people, because I think the talk is all about Marvin Harrison, and I wouldn't be shocked if Malik Nabers is a top 12 dynasty wide receiver by kind of September, October time, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on with him. And he's someone, yeah, you kind of hinted on it as well. He's somebody that might not necessarily test well. People might see his 40 time and be like, oh, Malik Nabers isn't as fast as we thought, but that's not really. He's almost like Cooper Kupp ran, what, a 4.6 something 40. He doesn't look that slow on the field because what he's good at is changing direction and getting into those spaces rapidly. So that's kind of what Malik Nabers is good at as well. Like you mentioned, that top speed he gets to really quickly, and he can move in any direction with that as well. So I think he's an absolute slam dunk prospect. He's probably going to land in a nicer spot than Marvin Harrison as well, just looking at how the draft's going.
Unless he ends up in New York with the Giants.
Yeah, that's true.
The thing with Nabers is he might not test particularly well in the 40, but how many times do wide receivers run 40 yards in a straight line? I think his ability to move at a high speed whilst changing direction is what's going to enable him to separate at, you know, an elite level. I mean, look, Keenan Allen, I think he ran like a 4.7. Yeah. And Keenan Allen's one of the best separators we've seen in the league over the last 10 years. So, you know, 40 time isn't everything. I'd much rather look at game film and how a guy's able to separate and how he's able to move, rather than purely focus on that, you know, 40 time.
But you tell me 40 times is something to do with a punt return or something. Well, do you tell me
I'm not sure where I'm sure I read this in a book. Maybe it was an NFL draft book that I read probably 15 years ago. But my understanding is that the 40-yard dash was created because that's the distance that a gunner runs on average on a punt. So that's the longest distance that a player will run in a straight line consistently, which is why they deemed the 40 yards. And it's just since the NFL combine has now become a TV event, it's the blue ribbon event, but actually it's completely pointless, because as I said, how many times do we see a player run 40 yards in a straight line?
And actually I can't be worried about this, but I went digging into numbers as well. Like what kind of impact does a player's 40 time have on their performance in the NFL? It's actually a negative impact. The faster they run, the worse they do for fantasy and for the NFL, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I did a fairly big deep dive a couple of years ago into the correlation between every single combine statistic, height, weight, BMI, everything, and fantasy production. And every single one was below 0.1 in terms of correlation. So there's basically no correlation between any physical test, any physical metric. The only ones that had some sort of consistent correlation were ones where you're kind of adding multiple things. So like weight adjusted speed score for running backs not a massive correlation, but you're talking like 0.15 or something. But it's, you know, it's some correlation. The RAS metric, so that I can't raw athletic score, is it? That has a decent correlation for the tight end position, for example. But there's no, right, they run fast, so therefore they're good at fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means your guy, Zach Kuntz, he's going to smash it next year at the Jets then, right? He's like got a perfect score in that, right? He was brilliant.
Yeah, there's also the fact that he's not very good. You know, he can be an incredible athlete. Like, I'm sure there's some decathletes out there that are phenomenal freak athletes that are probably useless on the football field. So,
yeah, who'd have thought Zach Kuntz would come up in this mock draft? Let's move on before we get too deep. So you got Malik Neighbors in a tier of his own. Who's following up then at 105?
Yeah, so this is again another tier of his own. And I know I talked earlier about there being two kind of surefire quarterbacks and then five question marks. And I think people mm-hmm. will probably be shocked to hear that, because I think the way people are talking, there's a third surefire quarterback. But for me, it's Jaden Daniels here. Yeah. And look, his ceiling is overall number one player in fantasy in terms of Superflex 101 start pick. That is his ceiling. He is such a phenomenal open field runner and such a phenomenal athlete that there's few players that would be able to produce what he could potentially produce, quite frankly. However, his floor is as low as any quarterback that we've talked about as a top three pick, quite frankly. You know, his floor is lower than Zach Wilson. Like, you know, Zach Wilson was poor and couldn't operate from the pocket and couldn't cope against pressure. I see very little times when Jaden Daniels can operate, make a progression read from the pocket and throw with consistent footwork. He's incredible out of structure. He is a phenomenal open field player. But you can't just live and die on that in the NFL. I mean, let's be honest, if that was good enough to be a franchise quarterback, Justin Fields would still be, you know, the surefire quarterback in Chicago. We wouldn't be talking about being traded. So I think that for me, Jaden Daniels, the ceiling's there, the talent is there, but he needs to seriously round out his game from the pocket, because let's not forget, there's a reason why he's been in college for 5 years. You know, if he was such a surefire prospect, he would have come out 2 years ago. But, you know, he had some struggles at Arizona State. He had some injuries. He finally landed in LSU with some phenomenal wide receivers and, you know, an impressive scheme and has absolutely blown up on the way to his Heisman. But there are some serious question marks. And I think anybody that is banging the drum for Jaden Daniels and saying that he's a surefire pick without at least caveating out some of those potential pitfalls is kind of maybe slightly disillusioned.
Yeah, I just think he is the perfect pick for someone. If this is your own pick, if you're picking at 105 and you're like almost there, right? Your team is so close to being that championship contender, that championship winner. If Jaden Daniels like reaches even close to his ceiling, he's that perfect player for you to take you to that championship level. And if he doesn't, you're probably just going to stay where you are anyway. So I think he's super value at 105. This shows you how good this class is, that you can get someone who was so dominant and won that Heisman in such spectacular fashion, and everyone's still like, yeah, he's not really that close to the other four guys. Really, I'd take those four guys every time. So I think that shows you how strong this class is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if he's the perfect quarterback, I always talk about trying to pair my QB2 and my QB3 as being different. You know, if I've got a safe QB2, if I've got Tua or Dak or someone like that, I'm shooting for a super high upside QB3. Jaden Daniels, you're probably not going to get him as your QB3, but if you've got a Derek Carr or maybe a Geno Smith or someone like that as your QB3, and you've got a hole at QB2, and you can plug Jaden Daniels, and you know what, if he hits, then you're probably looking at potentially winning the league with two superstar quarterbacks that are producing. But if he doesn't hit, you've still got that safety of Jaden Daniels can take some time. Hopefully he'll get there, but worst case scenario, I can plug Geno Smith or Kirk Cousins into my lineup, and I know they're going to give me solid QB2 production, and I'm not dying by only having to start Jaden Daniels every week, quite frankly.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So let's fire on then from pick 5 to pick number 6, Rich, and where are you going here? You've made a nice little, a few people have done this. You've got a nice little sort of pattern going on here with the reds and the blues. Are you keeping that pattern or what's going on?
No, I'm going to ruin it now, unfortunately. Oh. So we're gonna throw some yellow in there. I'm going to go with Brock Bowers. Look, I'm a Georgia fan, so I'm always going to be slightly biased, but I think he's such a phenomenal tight end prospect in terms of hands, route running. You know, how many tight ends do you see taking jet sweeps to the house? Like, his ability after the catch and with the ball in his hands is insane. He is such a freak athlete, and I think that the only knock I've got is that he might come in at 235, 240 pounds rather than that sort of ideal 250.
Yeah.
But the concern with that being that weight is that if he can't pair it with, you know, being a competent enough run blocker to basically make teams on him. And I think he's so good at the point of attack that teams are going to have to treat him like a tight end. You know, part of the issue the Bills had last year is that they wanted to utilize Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox as a two tight end. They were calling it 11 and a half personnel because Dalton Kincaid's a good enough wide receiver that he can be a wide receiver, but is big enough to be a tight end. Mm. The problem was that teams just matched it with nickel and said, well, Dalton Kincaid's a wide receiver, so we're just going to treat him like a wide receiver. And he wasn't a good enough run blocker to punish, well, not just him, but the Bills weren't good enough running the ball to punish teams for being in nickel, which would then force them to go kind of heavy if they could.
Yeah.
Brock Bowers is a good enough run blocker that if you line him up with a nickel corner over him, he's going to absolutely destroy him. He's not going to be able to line up one-on-one with most defensive ends in the league. But if we're talking traps and that sort of split zone and things like that, he's going to be good enough that he can hold up. And I think that that's the difference, is that he's going to be a movable piece. You know, this isn't Kyle Pitts, who's a wide receiver that sometimes lines up in line. Brock Bowers is a proper, genuine, he can play Y, he can play F, he can play H. And
George Kittle type guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think, maybe George Kittle's might be a little bit too extreme, just because he's basically a sixth offensive lineman in how he blocks. But he's got that in his range of outcomes. Like, I think a couple of years in the NFL weight program, a couple of years with NFL coaching, he could get to that George Kittle level as a blocker. I want him to come in at like 240 plus. Like, that would make me feel so much happier and so much more confident. If he comes in the 230s or even below that, I might be a little bit nervous.
Yeah, and I would sort of, even though these rookie tight ends have come in and they've sort of been, you know, smashing it right out the blocks lately, which is sort of a new trend for the tight end position, I would still preach patience with somebody like Brock Bowers. I don't expect him to come in and be, you know, tight end 4 or 5 on the season, or like a Sam Laporta right off the blocks. If he has a bit of a slower year, they are probably doing stuff like that with him, like maybe bulking him up a little bit, maybe making sure that he knows all the blocking schemes. Like, it is a bit easier for someone like a Laporta or like a Kincaid, who's not being asked to block as much as Brock Bowers is going to be. So he's going to have a bit more on his plate than some of these other guys that have done well. So patience a little bit with Brock Bowers for sure, right?
Yeah, and I think the thing that Bowers has probably got over the likes of Laporta is that Bowers is a more usable piece in the, you know, he can, as I said, he can get involved in like the run game. He was utilized on jet sweeps. I mean, I can't think who it was that he played in college, but there's the jet sweep where he takes it 80 yards to the house and runs past like 6 guys. He's going to get used in the screen game. Like, I think, you know, you can almost see a bit of like Dallas Goedert in the way that they use Dallas Goedert in that tight end screen game. He's got that as well. And I think that that's the biggest thing with Bowers, is that, like, if you're expecting him to compete with Sam Laporta's rookie year, like, it was historic for a reason. I think we need to not have that as expectations. But I wouldn't be shocked if he could do Kyle Pitts' rookie year, maybe with a couple more touchdowns. And that's, you know, think how excited people were about Kyle Pitts after that rookie year. So, I think he's going to be great. And I think he's got very few question marks out over his prospect profile.
Yeah.
But sadly, you know, being a tight end, the value is going to drop slightly.
Yeah, and last thing on Bowers, if this was tight end premium, do you still take him at 6 or do you bump him up?
Yeah, no, I'd still take him here. I just can't see a world. As much as I kind of slated Daniels a little bit, the ceiling of Daniels is so high that you've got to take the punt on him there, and I can't see a world where I'd take Bowers over him.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. So let's move on from Brock Bowers. Let's move on to pick number 7 of the first round. Rich, where are you going here?
Yeah, so I feel like this is probably slightly chalky so far, so maybe not the most exciting draft, but yeah, I'm going to go Roma Dunze. Not the biggest Odunze fan. You know, age-adjusted production is a big thing for me. Those first 2 years, yes, it was a joke of a program. Yes, there was COVID. They hardly played that first year, but he didn't really carve out much work in terms of, you know, you're looking at targets per route run and stuff like that. There wasn't anything there that sort of stands out.
Yeah.
But these last 2 years, he's been absolutely phenomenal. I think there's few players that have his size, possess his combination of size, speed, strength, and route run ability. I think normally we get these, you know, size, speed freaks that everybody gets hyped up about, whether it be, you know, Treylon Burks, Quinton Johnson, and they sort of fall into my, I know I bang on about my Calvin Johnson theory of big body wide receivers that can't play. Roma Dunze is not that, because he can run routes. He, you know, is a natural hands catcher. I think he is a more round player, but he's just that tier below Neighbors for me. So yeah, that's where he falls in. So I've got this tier as Brock Bowers or Dunze, and then the guy who's up next, the 108.
Yeah, I sort of echo everything you have to say about Odunze, Rich. I don't really have too much to add. I think he'd be a really solid prospect coming in. I think he'd be delighted to get him at 1-7. But who's the guy in the same tier as him at 1-8?
Yeah, so I guess this is probably where I differ massively from consensus slightly. So if you know me, if you know any of my evaluations and thought processes, look, I can see you already know who it's going to be. undersized smooth route runners, they're kind of my kryptonite. I think anytime you can be a true freshman at an elite program like Texas, and you can post yards per route run numbers of 2.61, targets per route run numbers of 27.4, like I'm standing up and pay attention. I think that Xavier Worthy's going to be, should we say, slated slightly and forgotten about because of his size. But I think, you know, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I was here banging the drum for the likes of Tank Dell and people like that. And everybody was forgetting about them because they were undersized. And I think route running translates. And I think that he is a guy that, I've yet to verify this, but I've been told he ran a 10.55 100 meters at age 17, which, you know, that's not just like NFL speed, that's like Olympic track speed. So I think he's a phenomenal route runner. I think he's such a smooth operator. He's got incredible agility, and if those speed numbers are true, I'm really excited about what he's going to be at the next level.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go with Xavier Worthy, but he ticks all these boxes. And I think if you have watched Devonta Smith, Tank Dell, even to a lesser extent, you know, guys like last year from the Colts, who I know you were talking about a little bit last year as Josh Downs, right? These guys all have come in and done, you know, really, really well. So for someone to be like, Xavier Worthy's too small, I feel like that's sort of 5 years ago. Like that's last millennium's news. Like you're not up to date on things and how they work in the NFL anymore. So I don't really think I'm knocking him on that at all.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Xavier Worthy's Deontay Johnson with a better 40 time. So, you know, that's the kind of, as much as people like to bang on and slate Deontay Johnson, this is a guy that finished as a wide receiver 8 overall season before last. So, you know, the ceiling is absolutely there.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you on Xavier Worthy. And yeah, I love that you're sticking with your guys and going with a 1-8. I've got not too much to disagree with Worthy. I think he's a great prospect. So who's following up then at 1-9? And is this a making of a brand new tier here, or are you still, is it Odunze, Worthy, so, and another guy?
So this is the point of the draft where I don't really want to be making a pick, quite frankly. So I quite like the top 7.
Yep.
I really like Xavier Worthy, but I wouldn't be drafting him at 108 because I know that with ADP and where he's going, I don't need to draft him there. So I'm probably looking to move back.
Yeah.
But these next few picks, the guys that are going around here in terms of consensus value, I don't particularly love. And I think the drop off in terms of overall value for me from those top eights to pick nine is quite significant. So the guy I'd go with here is JJ McCarthy. I think that similar to Jaden Daniels, you know, if we're talking about tools, if we're talking about upside, he's got as much upside as pretty much anyone in this draft. You know, I describe him in my rookie guide as the 2024 Rorschach test, in that you go in to watch him and whatever you want to see, you will see. If you want to see a natural passer who can, you know, he's got good arm strength, good accuracy, can make every throw, throw with timing, you can absolutely see that. If you want to see a skinny quarterback that struggles to withstand hits, that his arm strength wobbles slightly when he pushes the ball downfield, he struggles to push the ball outside the numbers, he struggles in bad weather, which, you know, I know is not a big thing, but look at how Brock Purdy struggled when it rains. And I think there's times where he struggles to throw with anticipation. He almost needs to see it before he throws it. He's all of those things and he's none of those things at the same time, because there's games where he throws with incredible anticipation. So yeah, his ceiling is really solid, reliable quarterback. You know, there's talk that he could be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. And if he's a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, there's no way you're getting him at 109 in your rookie draft. I hate to tell you that. But there's also a world where he falls out of day one completely and he's potentially a later day two, maybe even like a day three pick, because there are some serious flaws in his game. So, yeah, I feel like at this point where we're at in the process, I need to take him here. But as I said, that range of outcomes is pretty wild.
One thing I'm really going to look at with McCarthy is, I'm not sure if you got to me in your tape study, Rich, I'm going to look for the rare occasion when that Michigan offensive line lets him down. And what does he look like when he's really under pressure? Because he had just one of the best offensive lines in college football year after year in front of him. So I'm really interested to see how does he cope with under pressure? Because if he is a top 10 pick, probably not going to have as strong of an offensive line comparatively to the defensive line he's playing up against as he did in college.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also that, you know, there's a really good point that, did we ever see him carry the team? Like, no. I think I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but didn't he in the national championship game, didn't he throw like 12 pass attempts or something like that when the game was within hand? Like it was ridiculous. Yeah. And he's in the NFL. It doesn't matter what team you are. It doesn't matter how good offensive line, run game, defense you've got. At some point, you're going to have to put the team on your back. And yeah, I think the talent is there. I think there's absolutely potential he could do it, but I would like to have actually seen him do it in college before we ask him to do it in the NFL.
Yeah, me too. But yeah. If in doubt as well at this stage, maybe just take the high upside, take the quarterback and hope for the best at 1-9. So I have to ask, are you doing then the same at 110? We have a few more of these quarterbacks still here, or are there some other guys that you like?
No, so there's still a couple of guys that I'm looking at in this tier that are not the quarterback position. These are the kind of guys that I don't particularly like. I feel like I'm lower than consensus, but I don't have anybody that I would put ahead of them, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's where I'm saying I'm not particularly loving these picks, and I would probably be looking to move back. There's guys that I'd almost have very similar values in the second round. And if I can pick up a decent asset on top, that's probably what I'd look into do here. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with Troy Franklin here. It was interesting. We were talking before recording about watching at whole games rather than watching highlights. And to me, Troy Franklin is the kind of player that's going to show up whether you've only watched highlights or whether you've watched a whole game. Because if you plug on the highlights, there are few players that do not have the, you know, the incredible highlights that he does. He's blazing fast, tall, incredible at tracking the ball downfield. I've comped him to Martavis Bryant, who, his career kind of went off the rails, but I think let's not forget when he was fully operating in Pittsburgh, he was a phenomenal fantasy asset. And I think that he has got all of that in there. However, he is a long strider. He struggles to throttle down once he's up to speed. So he's kind of a not a one-trick pony, but if you think of DK Metcalf in his rookie year, he basically ran comebacks, posts, and goes. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of the world that we're probably looking at Troy Franklin as his rookie year. He, because he's not a natural route runner, he doesn't have the balance needed to consistently win at the catch point either. You know, for a guy his size, you'd expect him to be fantastic in contested catches. Unfortunately, he doesn't have the natural balance to basically hold his frame when he gets collided. So he gets knocked off balance quite easily and doesn't win at the catch point if he's not got that separation. So I think the highlights are going to be fantastic. He's probably going to be one of these better in best ball players early in his career. He could absolutely round out into a really nice all-round receiver, but I'm just a little bit concerned that he's going to be a boom-bust type that's not going to be able to command consistent volume.
Yeah, it's almost like his frame. He is, I think he's listed as 6'3", but like I think he's also listed as 200 pounds. I'd be shocked if he came in at 200.
I've got him listed at 6'3", 187 currently, and that's from PFF. So yeah, if he hits 200, I'd kind of suggest that he's probably a lot of water weight and probably won't see him run the 40 that day.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. He's very sort of slight, skinny kind of frame. I need to go back and watch some more Troy Franklin because I've heard you say this, and I've heard one or two other people say this about like his route running and how it's not as polished. It's like, that was one of the things I loved about him when I was watching him. I really liked his route running. So that's maybe something I need to go back and reassess the tape on because, yeah, maybe I just seen him running the same route really well a lot and thought he's got really good route running.
I think anytime he's asked to cut less than probably 45 degrees, he looks good and he's got great separation. He can get great separation. The problem is that because he's a long strider, he can't throttle down quickly enough. And he doesn't have that short area quickness to, you know, if you think of, we're going, NFL routes are more complex than this, but if he's going to run a go, he's fine. If he's going to run a post at 45 degrees, he's fine. Yeah. If he's going to run an in at 90 degrees, you have to completely slow your feet down. You have to change your hip position and cut. And because of his stride length, he doesn't do that. Like he's going to, because he's a long strider, he's going to test phenomenally in the 40. He's going to, the 40 is not a good test of NFL speed because it suits those guys that are long striders and can get up to speed. He's going to test fantastically in the 40, but for the NFL, for that route running, he needs to improve that short area quickness and just his ability to drop his hips, slow his feet down and make a cut without giving it away completely to the defender.
Definitely. I'm gonna go back and rewatch that and keep an eye for that because you're one of a couple of people said that about Troy Franklin, but he's still in there at 110. I think a solid first round pick. And who's following up then at 111?
Yeah, so again, this is a guy that I don't particularly love. A lot of what I said about Troy Franklin, I can kind of repeat about Brian Thomas Jr., but that's who I'm going with here. This rounds out the next tier for me. And I said about my Calvin Johnson theory. I don't know if I'm quite there to say it with Brian Thomas, but I think he's getting into that world where I think he's a size speed freak that doesn't run routes. And I think I've got serious questions about him translating to the NFL, quite frankly, because I think there is some knocks in his profile. You know, this is a guy that never had over a 20% targets per route run rate. He didn't see over a 1.4 yards per route run rate until this last year when he completely blew up. And I just don't know if he is anything more than a big body deep threat who gets on top of corners and can win contested catches. So I want to see more at the combine, particularly because I want to see how he moves out of pads. I'm intrigued to see when I finally get my rookie model numbers finalized. I'm intrigued to plug him in and see kind of where he comes out in that, because I don't think he's going to perform particularly well in that. And that forms quite a large part of my process. So, yeah, very, very intrigued to see Brian Thomas. But I know some people have got him up in the kind of 107, 108 range, and that's just too rich for me.
Yeah, that should definitely be your catchphrase, by the way. You should patent that immediately. Just too rich for me. I'm saying that's too rich for me. That is definitely, get that locked down for sure. But yeah, Brian Thomas Jr., he's the kind of guy that if you look at attributes and like the best attributes, I sometimes like to think of it like a traffic light system. Like you got like your green, your amber, and your red. And if your best attribute is something that falls into like the red category for me, then that's kind of worrying. And I think a lot of Brian Thomas's best attributes come in that red sort of area. Like, he's a good threat in the end zone. It's like, yeah, in college, like, that's sometimes really hard to translate to the NFL. So I put that in that kind of red category for things that are hard to translate over to the next level. Is that what you kind of think of those sort of attributes as well, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I've never thought of it that way, but I quite like the analogy. You know, I guess for me, I'd look at age-adjusted production and route running ability as those kind of green traffic lights, if you will, and speed and size are probably reds that some people will hang a hat on, but to me, kind of irrelevant, quite frankly. And yeah, he, as I said, he is that size, speed guy that, I don't want to say he's a one-trick pony because he's a bit more than that, but he's maybe a one-and-a-half-trick pony. Like, he's not far off.
One-and-a-half-trick pony. I like that. Love that for Brian Thomas. So he's at 111. Who's finishing off the first round then at 112?
Yeah, so this is another fairly big tier for me. At this point, as I said, I don't particularly love a lot of the guys in these rounds, so I'm purely shooting for upside. I'm going to go the running back position. And to me, the running back that's got the most upside in this, well, second most upside in this draft, Bucky Irving. I think he'll probably see some knocks through this process because of his size. You know, we'll hear the old, he can't carry a three down workload. He's not going to be able to run between the tackles. We said the same thing about Jamal Gibbs. We said the same thing about Devon Achane. You know, there's plenty of guys. This guy is absolutely electric. He could score every single time he touches the field. And yes, he's got a lighter frame. Yes, he looks to bounce the ball outside. But I think he can be a fantasy superstar on 10 to 15 touches. I don't think he's going to need to be one of these players that needs 20 plus touches to, you know, score you 15 to 20 fantasy points. And yes, he will be a very dependent on landing spot and draft capital.
Yeah.
But his ceiling is absolutely massive.
I think that's all of these running backs this year. There's no, like you said at the start, there's no Bijan, there's no Breece Hall, there's no one who I'm not particularly worried about where they go. But for these guys, I'm going to really, really base it on what was their draft capital, what is their landing spot. 9 out of 10 of these guys are going to end up in a committee anyway. So I don't know how much I can knock that, just the way things are going. So I think Bucky Irving's the kind of guy that can come in and, like Jahmyr Gibbs, actually maybe sometimes even benefit from being in a committee because it keeps him fresh. It keeps him like that ability for that home run hit that you can see. So I think Bucky Irving is a nice pick there at 112. And Rich, we got just enough time, I think, to smash through a round two. Why don't we do this? Why don't you give me 3 players in a row? And then we'll pick one to really focus on and talk about.
Sounds beautiful. So next guys will be Keon Coleman, Jonathan Brooks, and Braylon Allen.
Now, you had mentioned, just with when you were talking about Bucky Irving, you said that he's got the second highest potential for the running backs in this class. If I was to hazard a guess, is Braylon Allen your number one guy there?
No, he's not. I think Braylon Allen's very close to Bucky Irving in a sort of a 2A, 2B. But Jonathan Brooks, to me, has got the highest ceiling. I think if it wasn't for the ACL injury, he'd probably be in that tier alongside sort of JJ McCarthy and Franklin and Brian Thomas Jr., to be honest. He's the most complete back for me in this class. I think if he gets in a old school style, you think the Texans of the early 2000s, I've comped him to Arian Foster. I think in any sort of one cut offense, he's phenomenal. And I think he is the only player that I can say with confidence, I think can be a true three down workhorse in the NFL. The problem is that he's probably going to redshirt his rookie year because he is coming off that ACL injury. And that always makes you slightly nervous. So that's the reason why he's a little bit lower for me. That's the reason why I've let him fall to where he is. Purely because of that injury.
Yeah, Brooks is someone that whenever I started doing this process, Brooks's name did not come up at all. And I was thinking, I'm on to an absolute winner here. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm not going to mention him at all. I'm going to pick him up everywhere. But now sort of people are catching up on the film and Brooks's name is being mentioned around this point. I think that's about right for him. And I think you're spot on. It's something I've said to the previous guest. If he was fit and healthy, we wouldn't be having this discussion of struggling to get a running back into the first round. I think he'd be there in pretty much everybody's view. So I like Brooks in there. Also like Braylon Allen, like you said, he's another guy that's landing spot dependent. So who's your next three guys then, Rich?
Yeah, so we're going to go back to the quarterback well. So I've got Michael Penix, yep. Jalen Polk, and then Jatavion Saunders.
Love it. Tell me about, you know what, who I want to talk about? I want to talk about Jatavion Saunders, because I think he's someone that, if it wasn't for Brock Bowers, people would talk about a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's probably a bit more raw than some of the other high touted tight end prospects we've seen. But I think in terms of his overall athleticism, in terms of the tools, you think size, weight, speed, athleticism, hands, route running, he ticks every single box. He's just not kind of put it all together. And that's why he's a second round pick rather than a first round pick. And I think that we're probably going to see him in the NFL draft be that day two, maybe early day three type pick. Round two, maybe early round three type pick. Yeah. But I think that if he puts it all together, he has got the potential to be a top five dynasty tight end, which there's not many players you can say that about.
Yeah. And actually, if we can maybe just touch on, so Jalen Polk, I've seen consistently go ahead and considerably ahead of his teammate, Jalen McMillan. I didn't see that watching Washington at all this year. I always thought Polk was the third fiddle kind of guy. Do you want to maybe touch upon why do you think it's Polk that's arriving on NFL radars more than someone like a Jalen McMillan?
Yeah, I think that McMillan's not had the greatest year this year. He suffered with a couple of injuries and didn't put together the most phenomenal year. I think for me, Polk separates himself as a route runner and an athlete. I think he's a better athlete than McMillan. I think he's a better route runner. And that's where I have him ahead. I think that as the NFL combine comes around and stuff like that, I think we'll probably see them start to get closer together. I feel like the hate on McMillan has maybe gone a little bit too far. I finished watching him yesterday and really like what I see. But that's where I'm saying about this wide receiver class is so deep, you know, so many guys that I like him, but at the moment I've got him as a third round pick.
Which is great that he can pick up someone like him in the third round for sure. So let's crack on, Rich. We got two more sets of three. So who's your first or your penultimate? Sorry, set of three.
So we got Ladd McConkey. He's rounding out that tier with those other three, and then Bo Nix and Trey Benson.
Love it, Ladd McConkey locked in there. Oh, a sleeper has a little bit of a glitch. We'll chat a little bit about Ladd McConkey actually, because he's quite interesting, Rich. He's somebody that started off on nobody's radar, and then I've seen him go all the way up to like back end of the first round, people taking him and people sort of thinking, well, Tank Dell had a good Senior Bowl, so Ladd McConkey is small and he had a good Senior Bowl, so he must be amazing. I think he is very good, but I don't think he's first round potential. I think this is about right.
Yeah, I think the hype on him's maybe gone a little bit too far. I think he's a good receiver. I think he's a good complementary receiver. I don't think he's ever going to be, a borderline number one like Tank Dell is. I think that Tank Dell's a better athlete. I think he's a better route runner. I think he's a better all-round receiver. I think Ladd McConkey is a kind of slot receiver plus would be how I'd describe him. I think you'd do him a disservice if you're saying that he's just a slot receiver, but I don't think he's got the release skills to be able to consistently play outside against press coverage. So, yeah, I think some of the hype has gone a bit too far. I think, look, if he was as good as some people are hyping up to be, I think we'd have probably seen a bit more production at Georgia. You know, some of his advanced numbers are good. You know, you look at, he was over 23% target route run rate every year. He had yards per route run rate over 2 every year. Like, those are good numbers. But short of this last year, he never really hit great numbers. And part of the problem with this last year is that he only played 9 games. So, you know, are those numbers slightly pushed ahead because of small sample size? So, yeah, I think good. I'm very happy to take him here at this value, but certainly not pushing him up any higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And just remind me, Rich, you had, sorry, Super kind of froze out a little bit on me. You had Bo Nix, and who was the third?
So Trey Benson.
Bo Nix and Trey Benson as well. Okay, so let's get those guys locked in. And let's crack on then. Who are your final three of the second round, Rich?
So final three, so it's sticking with the running back position. So Blake Corum, Will Shipley, Marshawn Lloyd.
Going running back heavy in here. So someone who I want to talk about a little bit then, Rich, Blake Corum. I am almost certain that he's going to end up at the Los Angeles Chargers. What would that do for his draft capital if he does go there and reunite with his old coach?
Purely for me, it depends on draft capital. I do not value landing spot at all when it comes to dynasty rankings or values. Draft capital I weigh in, production I weigh in, film grade I weigh in, but I do not consider landing spot, because I think that A, landing spot can change instantly, and B, I also think as a community we're terrible at actually ascertaining what is a good and what is a bad landing spot. So I think that we overvalue certain landing spots without realizing what's good. And yeah, if he goes to Chargers, it probably is a good thing, because it means the guy who knows him better than anyone is a big fan. You know, he is a completely natural football player, but let's not forget, he is slightly undersized. I don't think he's an elite athlete. He's a guy that gets the most out of what he's been given, which is a fantastic trait and something coaches will love. But what he's been given isn't as good as some of the other athletes that he'll be going up against on a Sunday.
And we have to make the same point we made with JJ McCarthy, right? What he's been given is an absolutely awesome offensive line as well, which do a lot of the work for him, I'm sure. So it will be interesting to see what happens with Blake Corum for sure. And that kind of rounds out two full rounds, Rich. But I can't let you go without asking, are there any players you've not got to chat about today? Some sleepers, maybe some deep sleepers who you're like, keep an eye on this guy.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Wright's a guy that I watched over the last couple of days. Yes. He stands out, really big fan. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, he's not in sleeper, so you can't add him yet. But yeah, really like Ray Davis. And then Audric Estime, at this point, you know, outside the top two rounds, I'm generally looking at the running back position. And I think that there's a world where his skill set, his profile could potentially translate. And then if you want my sleeper, I don't know if he's going to be a sleeper for much longer, because I think he's going to go higher in the NFL draft than people are expecting right now. But Spencer Rattler, elite profile, you know, was considered a future 101 overall, had, you know, struggles in college, but he's got every tool you want. And I think that the NFL is probably going to be a bigger fan of his than people are expecting right now.
Yeah, absolutely love all of those names. Wright in particular, he's someone I'm really interested. I think I put a tweet out earlier today. I say if he's dropping to the third round in every draft, I'm going to have a hell of a lot of him, because before his injury, I thought he was looking really, really good. He was right up there with Brooks for me, actually, in my rankings until he got injured. But we have to wait and see just how he comes out. And I don't know, is he going to redshirt as well? I need to look into the severity of his injury and how he's doing.
Yeah, I think he should be okay to play. I don't think his is going to redshirt him as such.
That's pretty good to hear. So, Rich, that brings us to the end of the draft. Just thank you once again so much for coming along and doing this once again on the Dynasty Hot Seat. Just want to remind everyone, where can they find all your work online?
Yeah, no, thank you ever so much. Before you go, though, make sure you're subbing. You know, let's get Mags towards that 1,000. You can find me. I'm at Dynasty Island on Twitter. I post everything on there. Yeah, all my written work's over at DLF. Or as you said, we got the YouTube site, the Fantasy Sanctuary. You can come and join, be a member. You'll get a copy of my rookie guide, which will be dropping March, I think 13th is the aimed date that we're looking to drop that, just after the combine, once we get all those good numbers added in there. It's looking to be over 200 pages, 118 player profiles plus rookie models and all that good stuff.
That is amazing. You were aiming for just over 100. You've just got, you know what? I'm going to add an extra 20% on top of that. I'm just going to absolutely smash it. I love that. Rich, thank you once again. And thanks, everybody, for listening as well. As Rich, of course, said, make sure you're hitting that like and that subscribe button. It really does help a lot. And hopefully you enjoyed the show. Please remember, for anything Dynasty you need to know, keep it locked right here on the Certified Inferno. I will see you next time.